I'm Jesse. I'm an alcoholic. A little over a year ago, I wandered into this room shattered, broken, empty, and pretty clueless. And there was a young woman sharing her story, as we do. And she talked about, you know, doing things that I had done, and I really thought no one else had ever done those things. She talked about her first drink, and it was the same feelings I had at mine. She talked about feeling things that I thought nobody else but me felt. She talked about doing things that I thought nobody else but me did, and but I did. And she talked about a solution and how she got better and how she got through that and how she didn't have to drink anymore. And at the end of her story, or rather when she was talking about, you know, what it's like today, she got to the part about the relationship she has with her family. And it absolutely broke my heart because I wanted that so bad. I had absolutely destroyed every relationship with every single person who had ever cared about me by my own doing. And I wanted that so bad. You know, and she talked about how she got that, and I wanted it. And I saw all of you, and I saw that light behind every single one of your eyes, and I wanted it so bad. I didn't know how to have that. And I can say that through working these steps and getting a sponsor, I have that today. I have that relationship with my parents. You know, my dad's my best friend in the whole wide world, and I never thought that was going to happen again. You know, they closed the door on me a long time ago. And because of all of you and this wonderful, wonderful program and my higher power, that door's open today. And I get to be, you know, a friend, a daughter, a sister. I get to do all those things that I really didn't think were possible for me. So with that, I will give you Morgan.
All right. My name's Morgan. I'm an alcoholic. Are you going to sign me? Okay, great. Wow, I'm really nervous. But it's funny because I'm looking over the crowd and half of you were here when I came here a long time ago. And half of you I've gotten to know over the past couple of years. And I'm still incredibly nervous and hopefully it'll go away. My sobriety date is July 24th, 2005. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And my home group is the Lakeland Young People's Group. And it's neat to watch that group grow and change. But my grand sponsor's here tonight, so I'm a little nervous. But where to begin? I hope tonight somebody can relate like Jesse related. I didn't even realize I spoke when you first came in, and that's the cool thing about it. So I hope that happens for somebody else. But I was born, I was the first born in my family. I was actually born in Newport News, Virginia. My dad was stationed in the military up there. My mom drove up 8.5 months pregnant so my dad could be there for the birth. And after that, we moved to Polk County, and that's where I've lived pretty much the rest of my life. You know, my family, I have very loving parents. My dad, though, being in the military, was not around when I was growing up. My parents figured it out. They've been married 27 years, and he's been home for 10 of them. And so, you know, I pretty much grew up in a single-parent household. My mom was, you know, and she worked and she went to school, so I was kind of raised by my mom, my grandma, and my grandpa. And I was always loved. I always had everything I needed, but we were by no means rich. You know, my mom worked double shifts. She worked night shifts just so that she could send me to a private school. And I can remember at a very early age feeling uncomfortable. And probably around kindergarten, when I was born, I was actually born with it runs in our family with the women. We're born where we have one eye completely turning in. And so I was cross-eyed, you know, but just one. So it was really off balance. It almost would have been better to have both, you know. And but, you know, I had one. And the way you correct that is you wear an eye patch. So I had to wear an eye patch for like a year and a half. And I had bifocals with like these sparkly pink glasses. Yeah, it sounds cute. It really wasn't. But You know, and when you're little, I started wearing glasses at 1.5, which is incredibly young to be wearing glasses. So I always had my hair cut like a boy. I always had the mushroom cut, or when I wanted to grow it long, my mom always had it in like this mullet, which was horrible. And I always had a glasses strap, which just added to the effect. And to make matters worse, I was like a foot shorter than everybody in kindergarten, you know, so like, I look like I should be in preschool, everybody else looks like they should be in kindergarten, and I can remember my first distinct memory of like feeling different was on the playground in kindergarten, and we were playing house. And we played house every day on the playground, and I was always the baby. And I just remember, like, hating it, like, absolutely resenting everybody that I played with on the playground. And I can remember in kindergarten thinking, I just want to be like Emily, or I just want to be like Ashley. Why can't I be the mom? You know, and they were like, no, you're the baby, you know? And they would carry me around, and it was really horrible, you know? And really it wasn't, but I was already just so uncomfortable in my own skin. And I remember Halloween rolled around, and I wanted to be a ballerina, but I had an eye patch. And so we had this really great picture of me in a complete tutu, but I looked like a pirate. And just, you know, my outside, and the thing is, like, even if I didn't have, like, the eye patch and shorter than everybody else and the mullet, I really still think I would have felt different. I really do. I feel like there was something inside of me that just was not right from a very early age. And so I continued to feel like that all through middle school. And in middle school, my parents got me involved with soccer when I was like 8, you know, and I played soccer all the way up through college, and so that was kind of my outlet. Like, that was something I was really, really good at, and I excelled there, but still, like, even on the soccer field, I can remember if, like, somebody got past me on defense, like, I would just beat myself up, you know, like, oh, man, you suck, like, you're horrible, like, nobody would ever, ever want you on their team, you know, just, like, these intense feelings that a child normally doesn't have, I don't think. And so for me, you know, middle school was incredibly uncomfortable. People started getting boyfriends, and, you know, boys never looked at me like that in middle school. I was kind of like one of the guys, you know, like I actually won the most chin-ups for our entire school, which was like not cute, you know. And, you know, I didn't know where to fit. I had no idea where my niche was. And so being in a Catholic environment, like, nobody ever picked on me. You know, like, people say they're recovering Catholic. I don't think it's something you recover from. It's an illness, you know, and that's not why I drank. And everybody in my school was just incredibly compassionate and loving, and nobody ever thought about picking on me. And but Catholic elementary and middle school is way different than Catholic high school. And when I got to Catholic high school, up until this point, like, I had no idea about drinking or drugs or any of that. My parents never really drank around me. I thought pot was something you cooked in. You know, like, I really didn't. I really had no idea. I was very sheltered. And I got to high school, and I remember seeing kids, like, smoking cigarettes in the bathroom, and I just think, oh, my God, that's so bad. You know, like, these kids, they're just terrible. And really, in high school, you know, I lost the glasses, I got contacts, I got my first boyfriend, and that was my first, like, outside thing that I thought was going to fix how I was feeling. Like, if I could just have the boyfriend and the whole high school experience, I'll be okay. And I got the boyfriend, he was a really great guy, like, the perfect guy to bring home to mom, and eventually that's why, you know, I kind of didn't want to date him anymore. But when I was 15... And this is when my life really changed. 15. Oh, there we go. That's nice. That'll be exciting, right? So when I was 15, I went to Wisconsin, and I was visiting my cousin and our family up there. And she was the same age I was, a couple months older. And she was like, hey, I want to take you to a party. And I was like, yeah, like, totally, let's go. And my idea of a party up to this point was, like, cake and ice cream, and the parents are there, you know, you might go in the pool if you're lucky, you know, like it was nothing like what I was about to walk into. And so we show up to this log cabin that's like way out in the cut, and I get there, and there's like 60 cars, and there's loud music, and there's people throwing bottles off the roof, you know, and there's glass shattering everywhere. And like, what happened to me was what happened to me every time I got into a big social situation, and that was I was paralyzed by fear. I was absolutely, my whole life, riddled with, oh my gosh, you know, like, what are they going to think of me? What, they're not going to like me. If you really knew me, you'd hate me. You know, like, I'm not going to fit in. Like, this has been happening to me since I was in kindergarten, you know, and same feeling. And it's almost like that gut-wrenching fear where you almost can't even, like, walk forward and breathe. And, but I managed to make it up the steps, you know, and I just can't even look people in the eyes. And we get inside, and the guy that's hosting the party says, what would you like to drink? And, I said Coke, which I thought was like a really good answer, you know, and he looked at me like I was an idiot, and I was like, oh, I already blew it, you know, like I already screwed it up, they already hate me, you know. And he was like, well, he's like, we have something like Coke, and it's called Hooch. And it was this nasty, oh gosh, it was so nasty. It was this nasty malt beverage, kind of like Smirnoff Ice or something, and the first time I drank it, I remember just like getting like choked up right there, you know. And, but I looked around and everybody was drinking these things like pretty steadily, you know, like pretty fast. So I started drinking mine. And, you know, I think it's important for me to say, like, I had no idea what alcohol would do for me the first time I drank. The first time I drank to fit in. That was the only reason I drank. And, so I drank one really fast, and I looked around to see what everybody else was doing, you know, and everybody else was getting more. So I was like, oh, that's what you do. And so I went and got another one and then another one. And after, like, three or four, I remember distinctly, like, getting up off the couch to get another one. And just, like, all of a sudden, and I think Chuck explains it the best, like, that fear and that insecurity and everything that I had just vanished. You know, I didn't think I was like 10 feet tall or the most beautiful girl in the room. And I didn't think that you all liked me anymore. But all of a sudden it was just like, I didn't care anymore, you know? And that was like the best feeling in the world for someone like me, was to just not care. And, you know, so I was like, man, if I feel like this after three or four, like, I'm going to feel fabulous after nine. You know what I mean? Like, I automatically shot for nine for some reason, nine or ten, you know? And what ended up happening after that was, this is totally, like, hearsay. Like, somebody had to tell me. But I ended up blacking out at some point. And some guy convinced me that there was a meteor shower on the roof. I don't really think there was, you know, like in retrospect, like I really don't think it was the time of year for that. You know, but you know, like there's those guys, you know, and they're charming and there's meteor showers. And so you go on the roof and it seemed like a great idea, I guess. And on the roof, I smoked my first cigarette. I smoked my first joint. And I made out with the meteor shower boy, but I was in a relationship, so I immediately felt guilt the next day, you know. But I guess like being somebody who said they would never drink or never do drugs or never smoke, like I erased all those lines the first time I drank. I absolutely erased all those lines. You know, if somebody said it would make me feel even better than I felt, I would do it. And so I guess at some point, being on the roof, I tried to get down, and I was really in a blackout, and I fell, like, two stories, and landed on my back on the balcony below. And I think the only reason I probably didn't break my back is because I was probably much like a dead fish, you know? Like, I just, like, fell and plopped, and you know, didn't, like, tense up to break my fall. But I woke up the next morning in the backseat of an old beat-up car. I don't know whose car it was. My clothes were dirty. My back hurt. I had definitely peed in my pants. And my cousin was searching frantically for me everywhere. I mean, she had no idea where I was. And so I remember getting out of the car and her being like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, totally. You know, my pants are wet and I'm like walking weird because my back hurts. And she's like, are you sure you're okay? And I was like, yeah. I was like, can we do that again tonight? You know? And like my first drinking experience was not a great one to an outsider's perspective. You know, like I hurt myself. I hurt people I cared about. You know, I erased all these lines for myself. But for me, like, that feeling of not caring was so much more worth it than any consequences I experienced. And so I proceeded, when I came, we proceeded to party pretty much every night after that until I left. And when I came back to Lakeland, the guilt of kissing the guy on the roof, I felt bad, so I broke up with my boyfriend pretty quick. And that, and he didn't like that I was drinking now, and so he had to go. And so I immediately, like 2 weeks after breaking up with that guy, I started dating the guy at my school who had the fake ID, who was selling pot, and who, like, cut class all the time. And I wish I could say, like, he was such a great guy, you know? But, like, I dated him because I knew I could drink the way I wanted to drink. I knew he could help me drink the way I wanted to drink, and that he would never talk to me about my drinking. And so I continued. I actually continued a pattern of dating guys that really just were as sick as I was. And that way I never had to really look at myself. But I managed to do pretty well through high school. I kept my grades up. I graduated with honors. I got into a college full ride to run cross country, and I got into three other schools that year. And rather than go to a school where, thank you, it's Get Sober time. Rather than go to a school where I could, you know, be paid to go there, I decided to pay to go to school and go to Florida State, which was number two in Playboy magazine for partying, which made total sense to me. And I moved to Tallahassee, and that's when I really, that's when my alcoholism really, really progressed. You know, all through high school I was a weekend warrior, and then when I got to college, it was like no breaks, you know? And I continued to pretty much drink into a blackout. I can only remember really probably 10 times or so where I didn't black out. I thought that was like the goal of drinking. You know, when I got here and I learned that it wasn't, and I was like, oh my God, I've had this all wrong, you know? And, but at Florida State, I continued drinking, and, my transcript's like the progression of alcoholism, you know? A's, B's, C's, D's, and then withdrawal with failure, withdrawal with failure, withdrawal with failure. I couldn't show up for class. And I was a good student, you know what I mean? When I apply myself, I'm smart, I can handle it, you know, but alcohol was definitely just so much more important to me. And as I got sicker, so did the crowd I hung out with. And eventually what happened to the end, I started dating this guy who was selling drugs, and he was also, like, ratting people out, like, snitching, you know? And I had no idea, right? Like, if I knew, I would never date a snitch, you know? And so I started dating this guy, and he was snitching people out, and people started following him. And what happens is I'm so incredibly self-centered that I think people are following me. I think people are following me. And at this point, I'm about 2.5 years into college, and I'm convinced that alcohol is making me more paranoid. And I immediately break up with the guy who's snitching, and I start, you know, dating this other guy. And he looks at me one day, and he's like, you know, he's like, my sister's bipolar, and I really think you're schizophrenic. And I looked at him, and I was like, yeah, you know? I was like, that's totally it. I am so schizophrenic. And I bought it, hook, line, and sinker. And within 5 minutes, I convinced myself that I was schizophrenic, that I had been schizophrenic my whole life, because that's why, you know, there's all this noise in my head. And then I convinced myself that Florida State was a school for schizophrenic people, and that I was, like, the test subject, that everybody was, like, observing me, you know, like, the level of my self-centeredness was just insane. And I remember I stopped drinking. I stopped eating because I was convinced at this point that the feds had infiltrated my roommates, and my roommates were poisoning my food. And So I stopped eating, and I just locked myself in my room and smoked pot for 4 days, because that's going to make my paranoia better. And and what happened was somebody, I really don't know who called my mom, but somebody called my mom and was like, I don't know what's wrong with Morgan, but there's something really wrong, and I think you guys should come here. And my parents were going away for like a romantic weekend, and so they, plans change, go to Tallahassee, and I know my parents are coming. It's a four-hour drive. I have plenty of time to, like, shower, get myself together, you know, clean up my room so that I can look normal. But I just didn't have it in me. And, you know, at this point, my mom gets there. She knocks on the door. I won't let her in because I'm convinced that the cops are with her, you know. And finally, they convince me they're not. And they walk in, and my room's an absolute mess, you know. Like, in blackouts, I acquired all these exotic pets. So I have like an albino corn snake over here, and I have emperor scorpions over here, and I have a Pac-Man frog in the corner, you know, and he's dead. He's been dead for like 3 weeks. And, because he required one cricket a week, which was like too much. And, you know, and, my parents walk in, and my mother's instantly enraged. And my dad walks in, and he just starts bawling, you know, and, my dad looks at me and he's like, what happened to you? You know what I mean? Like, what happened to you? And I just look at him and I'm like, what? There's nothing wrong with the way I'm living. And like, clearly there is, you know, like, clearly there is. And so my parents started taking me to a hotel, and within 5 minutes of me like running my mouth, they were like, okay. And they started taking me home. And the four-hour trip, I told my parents every rotten thing I'd ever done, everybody I'd ever slept with. I did an open fist up with my parents. And that's really a horrible thing to do. And my mom took me straight to the hospital because I thought after I told my parents everything I had done that I would feel better. You know, that if I could just get this guilt off my chest, I'd be okay. And I didn't. And so I instantly went to, well, I'm just going to kill myself. I cannot live this way anymore. And so my mom took me to the hospital, and I got admitted to the mental health / addictions unit, where they really weren't sure what side of the fence I should be on. And what happened was I saw two different psychiatrists, and they both diagnosed me with the onsets of paranoid schizophrenia, because that's what my alcoholism looks like when I get really bad. And this one little therapist, well, she wasn't little, this one therapist came down on her, you know, scooter, and somehow convinced, I don't know how she did this, but she convinced the psychiatrist to let me go into the intensive alcohol and drug rehab program. It was like a 7-week outpatient program. And this program required you to go to AA or NA meetings. And I went to both for a while, and then I found my home in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I without a doubt am powerless over alcohol. You know, I can't control the amount I take. And for me, I was probably like 3 weeks sober. I was still really paranoid. I still thought at meetings that people were poisoning the coffee. So I started making the coffee because somebody was like, well, if you think something's in it, just make it, you know? And so I started making the coffee at a meeting for about 6 months. And at about 3 weeks sober, I ran into these women. I actually ran into a young girl. She was the only other young girl in my area at that time. And she brought me to this van, you know, to this clubhouse, and we went to a AA meeting that was like almost 2 hours away in Avon Park. And I got in this van, and I sat in the very far back because that was where I was placed. And in the front seat was this woman, Pam. And next to her was this woman, Mary. And next, and behind them was this woman, Elaine, and this woman, B. And Mary and B were both, they were both on oxygen because they had emphysema. And Cherry was the one sitting in back with me, and she had about a year. And the rest of the women had over 30 years almost, you know? And I remember just telling my sob story and getting it out and like, oh my God, feel bad for me. This is why I drank. And Mary, who had 48 years at the time, like straightened out her oxygen and was like, maybe you should just listen for a while. And I was so offended, you know, I was like, this woman is so rude, you know? And every time I would try to talk, like somebody would talk over me and I'd be like, God, you know, like they have no social skills at all. And, But what happened was, you know, in that hour and a half, 2 hour car ride to Avon Park, and then another hour and a half back, the women just kind of told little bits and pieces of their story, you know. And I think the thing that, like, Jesse related to, where they would talk about these, like, horrifying things that they did, but they were laughing about it. And at first, I'm like, these women are sick. You know, like, first of all, those are not things you tell to everybody. And then secondly, like, they're laughing about that. I'm like, wow. And, but what I saw was that they were free from it. You know, like, they were absolutely not a prisoner to their past anymore, and I had no idea what that felt like. But I knew, like, that night that part of me just really wanted that. And so I started running with these women, and my best friends became 60, 70, 80 years old. And, you know, for me, 5 minutes, sobriety, oh, it's been like a beautiful journey. You know, I don't want to sit here and tell you that it's just been easy. You know, I've had a lot of tough times in sobriety, but for me, at about 8 months sober, I hadn't worked a single step, and I was about to drink. I was just absolutely crazy, and I went to my sponsor now, Donna, and she wasn't sponsoring me then, but I was like, Donna, something's wrong with me, you know, and she immediately started taking me through the steps, and you know, to actually go through the steps, you know, and get that spiritual experience, you know, and to be free from my past, and then to be able to take other girls, some of which are here tonight. Hey, Danielle. And, you know, to be able to just be free of it, you know, and to be able to share that with other people was amazing. And my family, and I always talk about my family, and it's even gotten more wonderful recently, but my family was, my dad didn't know what to do with me. He was heartbroken. My mother was incredibly angry at me for quite a few years. And each one of those relationships was, like, completely mended. You know, my mom and I, like, re-fell in love with each other on the golf course when I was, like, 3 years sober. I took up golf, and I hated it for a while, but I knew it was a way I could connect with my mom. And her and I, you know, we're, like, best friends. We're going to Vegas in January together, you know? And my dad and I, like, we had a real, like, we, like, went at each other one day, you know? And, like, ever since then, we've been cool. You know, and, like, every amends has been so different. And my brother has probably been the most gradual one, and he's been the most recent one. My brother, for many years, like, really did not care what I had to say about being sorry. You know, my brother did not believe I was an alcoholic. He thought I was just an attention, pardon my language, whore. This is exactly how he said it. He's like, she's not an alcoholic. And I actually had a friend die in a drunk driving accident. Like, one of my best friends from high school died about a couple months ago. And my brother drove from Tampa to Lakeland to take me to the funeral. And at the funeral, you know, we're both crying. And I always get choked up at this part. Maybe I won't when it's not so recent. But, you know, he took me to dinner after that. And my brother, who, like, absolutely hated my guts, who had, like, completely written me off, we sat at dinner, and he was like, you know, Morgan, if anything ever happened to you, it would never be the same. And, you know, he, since then, I just got off of a 3-day cruise with my family, which was, like, crazy. And, but it was fun, and we played a lot of Scrabble, because it was really way too cold to go on a cruise. And, you know, but I just got to enjoy my family, you know, and I just got to be there and be a daughter and be a sister. And if you're new, I have like 1 minute, right, Nuck? Okay. If you're new and you didn't relate to anything I said, then hopefully you'll relate to the next speaker, you know. But if you even felt like half the feelings I felt, like, I have never had to feel the way that I felt when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never, ever again had to feel that sense of hopelessness and desperation and just self-loathing that I felt when I got here. And And that's a result of not just coming to a few AA meetings. You know, like, I had to come here and I had to do a lot of work. And I had to get really active in service work. And I love this home group for that, because they really encourage you to get active. And if you're not active, you're missing out. And, you know, for me, spiritual growth has not always been easy. But the relationship that I have with God today, you know, because I gave that relationship up when I gained alcohol. Like, I completely cut myself off from God. And today I have an amazing relationship with a God of my understanding. And I have an amazing relationship with friends that, like, when I see them, I just feel like I can breathe better, you know? And that's all a result of coming here and getting with women who knew how to do that. So that's all I have. Thanks.